Oh yes, you know what that music means. That means it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be. Free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. So excited to have Squarespace on board. They make this show free to you. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. And also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, or as I'm trying out this week, my Freakonem. Freakonem! The man who celebrates April Fool's Day all year round, Christian Spicer. Welcome, Christian.
Thanks, Jeff. Good to be here. Quick serious note up front, something I did. Jeff, maybe you've done too. We had a few small earthquakes this past week here in Southern California, and yeah. I went and updated my emergency preparedness kit. And smart. If you don't have one, make one. It doesn't take that much time, and you hope to never use it, but it's always good to have it if you do. So, a little
the
serious.
More, no, with Christian, very good advice. We are luckily one day before April Fool's Day, so we don't have to deal with basically the ruining of the internet every year. I pretty much hate April Fool's Day now because it ruins the internet, but luckily we'll get in right before the bell, so most of our stories, although I think we have one big story that is an April Fool's joke that came early, but of course, you know, DLC stands for your downloadable Cannata, your downloadable Christian, but this week... DLC also means distinguished Londoner, Cocker, because we've got our very first international guest, a man who has reported on and reviewed games for pretty much every major UK outlet known to geek, Mr. Guy Cocker. Welcome, Guy.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Very excited to have you. I actually met Guy many years ago now in London when we went there for TRS. And you interviewed us for GameSpot UK. When is that interview airing? I'm so curious.
Dude, I don't think it ever aired, did it? I just remember hanging out with you guys in the pub afterwards. So
yeah,
it was good fun. Yeah, I don't know if we ever. I'll go back. I'm not at GameSpot anymore, but I will go back and try and find that interview and then post it. You can have it as a bonus feature.
I love it.
Talking about I don't know Darksiders, the original, because it was like 5 years ago. But yes.
Hilarious. So who are you reporting for now? I feel like you basically have every single outlet in the UK wrapped up. What are you working on this moment?
I don't know about that. I mean, I'm writing for Wired in the UK. I've just done something outside of games, like basically like high-end racing rigs, so the really expensive, like £40,000, so I guess $70,000, really expensive ones. And I worked with a Formula One test driver. She's called Susie Wolf. She works with Williams over here. So I just did that. So it's kind of tangential to games. But at the moment, I'm working at the BBC and we're making a drama that's set in the world of video games. But it's a bit early to talk about it just yet. But it's I'm kind of working on that, researching that, developing that at the moment. So that's taking up my time, and then doing stuff for Wired, stuff for T3, and Stuff magazine over here. I think you guys in the US have Stuff, but maybe not T3. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. Yeah,
yeah. And then if you really, you know, if you don't get enough of me on this show on DLC, then I'm on BBC Five Live talking games most Saturdays. So on Saturday I'll be talking about, hopefully if I have time to review it, maybe a bit of Elder Scrolls Online.
Yes.
What else am I doing? Monument Valley. Have you guys seen Monument Valley on iPhone and iPad? It's by Shoreditch based team. It's the review embargo isn't until April the 3rd, but it's good. It's good. And what else? Surgeon Sim on iPad, I think. So I'm busy reviewing those sorts of games, but real pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Well, we're excited to have you. As I said, you're everywhere, so we're glad you're here as well. All right, let's get into it. The way we always start the show, of course, is with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, is the segment of the show where we try to convince each other what is the most important story in gaming of the week. And I have to say, basically right after we stopped recording last week, a bomb went off in my internet, excuse me, my Twitter feed with so many hashtag DLC SOTW submissions with the big news. But I'm curious, Mr. Guy Cocker, what you think the most important story of the week was.
Well, I mean, so this is obviously a big one, the Facebook acquiring Oculus Rift. There's a gaming bar. If you've got any London-based listeners, there's a gaming bar called Loading that's just opened coincidentally at the end of my road. And I was there for an indie developer multiplayer kind of, it's not like a beta test, but like they just get together in a pub and play games and do multiplayer and show them before they're being released. Some really, really good stuff there. But this Oculus Rift thing happened during that and no one could quite believe that it was real. But do you want me to pick a different story to this?
That is up to you. Whatever you'd like.
Let's go with this one. This is the big one. I'm going to convince you guys that this is the biggest story of the week because Oculus VR was the underdog. It was the Kickstarter project that did massively, massively well off the back of, you know, people wanting to make virtual reality a reality. And now Facebook comes in pretty much unpredicted. I mean, there's been so many different, you know, IPOs and I mean, the guys behind Candy Crush King went public this week, but lots of purchases, you know, Facebook doing WhatsApp, but no one really saw this Oculus Rift thing coming along. And I think the backlash has been kind of the bigger story. Obviously, Notch pulling out and saying he's not going to be making Minecraft for the platform anymore. Even John Carmack, who famously defected from id Software over to work with those guys and be their chief technology officer, he said he didn't know that this was happening. So it's obviously a big news. I mean, I think the big concern is people that invested in this early on feeling a little bit betrayed and perhaps maybe naively from their side thinking, well, do we get some of this money? Do we get some of this $2 billion? I mean, that's probably a bit naive, but lots of people quite rightly say, you know, we funded this as a project for gaming and now it's going to a social network company. And the obvious upshot of that and Facebook's business model is, are we going to just have loads of ads served against our content here? So I think from my perspective, it's a good thing because, you know, Facebook is going to pump money into this and going to make it a success, and you know, you've got the likes of Sony obviously saying that the Oculus was a big they were saying thank you to Oculus because it's a big reason that virtual reality has taken off again. But I don't know, I'd be interested to know what you guys think.
I mean, you touched upon the many different facets of this story, and like I said, this was a huge moment. I mean, you can submit stories all through the week using hashtag DLCSOTW, and so many people recognize this as really being the big, big story of the week. At Hulk Caesar, at Arhole, at BWAG Sports, at Constell, just to name a few of the people that submitted this story to us. And there is so much to it. First of all, you have, of course, as you mentioned, Facebook being really not a gaming company up to this point, but now is venturing into this Oculus space, this VR space. So what does that mean? I think, as you said, there's a lot of this a knee-jerk panic as to, you know, Oculus quote-unquote selling out or losing focus on creating a real gaming device and getting into what many people perceive as being a company that isn't on their side, that's only there to feed them ads and mine their data. And certainly you have to think that Facebook's motivation in this case is somewhat that. There's a really fantastic article that was posted this week about reasons to be worried about Oculus's purchase by Facebook by Peter Berkman, which I really recommend people check out. Because a lot of the things that people are worried about are silly things, I think, to be worried about. You know, there's a lot of worried about, oh, it's not going to be a gaming device anymore. Well, it clearly is. And they have a lot of people in place, like, as you said, John Carmack and others, including now the head of the VR development for formerly of Valve, Michael Abrash, who moved over now. And I think that's an example of what has happened with Facebook's acquisition is they got a whole bunch of money and they can hire really cool people. And now it can be even more awesome, potentially. So, Christian, what is your reaction to this news?
I'm still not thrilled. I don't think it's still knee-jerk. I mean, my perspective comes from, I don't know of a single acquisition that Facebook has had that I think has made that app or that experience for that technology that I used better. maybe on the back end, maybe Instagram is more stable than it otherwise would be or something like that. But I'm just never, you know, the user experience hasn't been a positive one for me. And then the other side of the argument, I think, is people will, you'll hear people say things like, oh, well, this is great because it's infusing Oculus with a bunch of money and now they can do what they want. And, you know, Oculus wouldn't have been able to survive without something like this, without a buyout. And while that might be true, part of me says, well, if a company couldn't survive without $2 billion from Facebook, and but everyone's so excited about VR, well, maybe the time just wasn't right for VR, right?
If well, I don't think anybody was saying they couldn't survive. I think they're just saying, well, we have the push and the war chest of a huge company behind us, and it gives us the ability to do things that we necessarily weren't going to be able to do before this.
But it also then gives them the mandate. I mean, that's the thing, right? Who knows? This is all speculation. But right now, they're like, oh, we're going to remain independent. Our offices are still in Irvine. We're going to still do what we want to do, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, $2 billion is a lot of, it's a lot of money. And just to let them keep doing what they're doing, you know, a friend buys you dinner. And next time, you know, in your head, well, I owe Jeff dinner next time we go out. And that's fine. There's no problem with that. But at the same time, Facebook buys you for $2 billion. You better believe you have to listen to what they want, you know?
Oh, sure. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, they are a property of Facebook at this point. And we're certainly going to see applications of this technology for more than just games. I think even more so now that Facebook has them and they're going to want to use it to mine data. I think that that's probably very true. But I think mining data was going to happen with VR anyway. I don't know. I don't know if... It is a little worrisome from a privacy standpoint, from a, you know... What plans do they have? But on the other hand, I love what Zuck has been saying, which is, you know, having these console manufacturers use VR as a peripheral means that it's only going to ever be a peripheral for these guys. And what we want, what we envision, is that it's its own console. It's its own device. You plug into the VR headset. You don't need a computer. It's its own thing. We kind of want to move toward that future. That's kind of cool and kind of exciting. And a company that has that kind of resources, I'm excited that these guys are able to really push forward and make VR a reality. And they certainly have an incredible amount of talent at this company now. I mean, you have Michael Abrash, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, and John Carmack. And John Carmack, you know, he came out and seemed very level-headed about the whole thing. He didn't push the company line. He just said, you know, I think that they get it from a big picture standpoint. I think that's very cool to hear. And you have the other side, as Guy, you pointed out, of Notch coming out and saying, no more Minecraft on Facebook. I don't like Facebook. And I think he's sort of a voice of a very populist standpoint of these people who really have turned against Facebook and think of it as the evil empire. So I think it's more of a PR thing than anything else. I really think that from a product standpoint, it's only good in the short term for Oculus because they got better people working for them and they have a better chance of putting out something that we're all going to get to actually use and buy. What do you think, Guy?
Yeah, I mean, so a number of things to say about it. Yeah, so when Notch said he was cancelling Minecraft, I think Notch kicked in quite a lot of money at the Kickstarter stage, maybe $200,000, something like that. And then Cliff Bleszinski then called him a pouty kid for pulling his game from it. I think, you know, Notch is entitled to do what he wants to do. He has quite a lot of influence. I don't think other developers will stop developing for it, but you know, he's entitled to do what he wants. I think one thing to say about it is it's really, from my perspective as a journalist, it's really cool to see Palmer Luckey, who's he's in his mid-20s still, a young guy, essentially go from making something that he wanted to do in his, you know, his garage, basically. He was wanting to make virtual reality, he thought that there was something in it, and now, you know, he's doing very, I don't know what his terms from this deal are, but it's safe to assume he's doing all right out of it. And so
he's
kind of
changed
the
world.
That's a real kind of bedroom guy doing well. And when I went to, I don't remember really, really... vividly going to Gamescom, I think it was last year, it might have been the year before, and they had this tiny little booth, Oculus, and I was just going along to check it out because I think I'd seen it before once. I wanted to check it out again, and I knocked on the door a couple of times. It just said had a sign on the door just saying, please knock, and if we don't answer, we'll be back very shortly. I knocked a few times, and then no one answered. So I just wandered off, and I spoke to another journalist, and he's like, yeah, they're kind of rock and roll. Don't just walk in. And then lo and behold, I walked in, and I interviewed Palmer, and he's an interesting interviewee, because he's clearly a very technically minded guy. He's a genius from what he's done, but he was quite abrasive, you know. He wasn't making much of an effort to engage me, but he let the product speak for itself. And at that point, that was the first time I tried the high definition model of the machine. And I have to say, actually, from a moving away from gaming, purely entertainment-based thing, one of the interesting demos that I saw was they played the Man of Steel trailer. I think it was the Man of Steel trailer. But they did it – you guys might have seen this demo. But they did it in a cinema environment. So you're in the headset, you're watching it, and right. You can move your head around and see the seats and the lights going down the aisles. I mean, it's basically a whole cinema experience apart from the sticky floors and the popcorn everywhere. And it sounds weird to say this, but I thought it was really immersive, and it kind of showed a new avenue for where Oculus could go. And they were talking about the fact that they could put Oculus into airplanes and give you that cinema feel, you know, while you're watching movies on the plane. And it does show there is a wide potential, I think, for Oculus as an entertainment device aside from gaming. And I'll be interested to see where it goes.
I can't agree. I don't disagree with a lot of what Guy said, but Jeff, I can't agree with it being a good thing. I mean, I think, yeah, getting the tech out there is good, but to say that it's good that Facebook bought them and now they have this money and they can hire these talent, you know, this better talent, to me sounds like you're justifying a universal you, not you, Jeff Cannata. It sounds like people are justifying that they're okay with this purchase instead of, I mean, there are a million other companies out there that could have invested, or they could have done angel investing. If people thought that this is going to be so revolutionary and is capable of all these things, you know, you can get money other ways than a company buying you out. And while it's good to have great talent working for a company, the other end of that spectrum is it's Facebook doing it. And are people happy with that? And I will be ecstatic, you know, if at the end of this year, 2 years, whatever it is, you know, my foot is firmly in my mouth and Facebook releases this thing and it's amazing and I love it. I want nothing more than that. But like, my skepticism is just too high. So the money, the infusion of talent, getting the best possible product out there.
But what is your skepticism about? Like, what are you skeptical of?
Facebook's track record creating devices, creating services that are...
Well, it's not like annoying. The guys at Facebook are, you know, going to work on this now. I predict that this is the last time you see the Facebook logo next to the Oculus Rift logo. I think, or at least for a long time, I think you're going to see Oculus be its own autonomous entity, at least front facing to the public. I think they would be fools to have it be called the Facebook Oculus Rift, or to have it tied into that service in any way in the immediate next 2 to 3 years. Because what it's going to be, I think, is going to continue to be a gaming device first and foremost, that is going to garner an audience based on the cool whiz-bang technology. It's not going to be like plug in and look at, you know, your friend's Facebook feed on the Oculus Rift. There's not going to be anything tying it to Facebook, I don't think. I'd be shocked if that was the case.
I don't know. I just think $2 billion is a whole lot of money to not have one of the most recognizable brands in the world publicly attached to this thing when
but
it
they
goes
don't
out.
Care about that. They have their own brand. What they're trying to do, I think, it seems to me, is that they're trying to diversify the kinds of businesses that Facebook has. And yes, I'm sure they want to apply that technology to creating data mining. Yes, but I think anybody that has VR, I think Sony's going to do the same damn thing. I think that anybody that has VR is going to use it to collect viewing habits and track your eyeballs and see what you're looking at. Yeah, that's what this technology is going to be. That's what technology is going to be used for, period. Going forward, that's the world we live in now, is collect information about people because that's what has value, right? So maybe Facebook is the great evil. Maybe they are the company that is sort of the most grievous offender in this way. But I don't think that you're going to see any difference in the business practice of Oculus going forward in the next 3 to 5 years, then you all that they get out of this is a bigger war chest of money, the ability to make a product, fund that product, and hopefully give it to us as consumers cheaper. I mean, that was one of the biggest things that this news story said, is that Zuck came to them and said, hey, we can run at a much smaller margin than you can, so we can give this, make this product available less expensively to the consumer. So I don't know. I'm Mr. Silver Lining. I'm always looking at the bright side. But I really think this could be a good thing for us.
Let me ask you guys both this, Guy and Jeff. Facebook bought it for $2 billion or Valve bought them for $1 billion. Which one makes you happier as a gamer?
That's an easy answer to that one. The Valve, obviously.
Well, yes, of course. I mean, I think that that's... But that's not the choice that we had. And Valve isn't buying anybody for $1 billion because, you know, that's not what they do. And I'm not saying that... I'm not saying that if you had given me a menu of companies, I would have selected... Facebook as
a
the one I want.
Cheesecake Factory menu, a really big menu.
Yeah, right. I'm saying that looking at the reality of what happened, I don't think this is the sky is falling for VR. In fact, I think this is the year of VR is in full effect. It's happening. And it's proof that a company the size and scope of Facebook looks at that and goes, this is the future. We got to get in this game. I think that's a really exciting thing. And because literally last week we had this whole discussion about, is VR niche or is it, you know, is it going to be a mainstream product that your mom wants to use? Well, clearly the powers that be at Facebook think it's the latter.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I think one of the things that I've noticed recently, I'm assuming you guys have played on the device in its various iterations. There's basically, as far as I understand it anyway, there's a sort of standard definition one out there, which does look quite pixelated when you put it on the high definition one. I played more of the sort of standard definition one. And the thing that's been, it might just be me and my stupid eyesight or something, but I don't wear glasses or contact lenses, but I played a game called, this is bad publicity for these guys, but Loading Human. I played a game called Loading Human recently, and it's you use the Oculus Rift, and then you use the gaming company Razer make Wii controller motion controllers that you can use for PC games. Can't remember what it's called exactly, but you use this in tandem to play a first-person adventure, and the idea is you stand up. And at first, I felt like my body was swaying and I was going to physically fall over, so I sat down. But playing this game, I actually felt I was going to be sick. I felt I was going to vomit. Mm-hmm. It was deeply. I was sweating. It was deeply, deeply traumatic for me. Mm-hmm. So I think if some of Facebook's money can help to eradicate that problem, that motion sickness problem, that still seems to be a little bit of an issue on the high definition model, which I've used. I mean, there's a demo where you kind of fly around a castle, and there is that moment where that sort of stomach in your mouth moment when you look down and you feel you see this massive empty chasm, and you're like, oh god, I don't like that. But how do you guys find it? Do you find it, because it is a fantastic technology, it's just got this thing for me at least where it's the motion sickness problem.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's clearly the biggest obstacle for it having mainstream appeal. I mean, if there's even a, you know, even a 5% of your audience that just will throw up using your device, that's a problem, right? So I think that's the biggest thing they need to tackle. And I think
alcohol.
Actually, that's a selling point for some products, as you said.
I think it's interesting, though, going back to your previous point, though, there were probably other offers on the table. I mean, if it's anything like WhatsApp, you know, after they went to Facebook, Google came out, or someone from Google said that they'd offered them more money and they'd gone with Facebook. So it's not completely out of the realms of possibility to say someone like Valve might have made them an offer. I think Valve had their own, like Jeff said, their own virtual reality thing happening for a while, and obviously that didn't come to fruition. But it's not out of the realms of possibility. It always surprised me. The reason I thought Oculus Rift might not take off was because Sony and Microsoft hadn't invested in them at this stage. Obviously, Sony's doing its own thing, but I think Microsoft would be a likely suitor if they thought that the future was in VR. I would have thought they would have been at least having conversations with those guys. So,
well, we got that other story this week that Microsoft spent $150 million, which is no $2 billion, but is still a chunk of change, to purchase a AR company, not VR, AR, that's augmented reality. And it occurs to me, because these two stories came out back to back, people were comparing this to the Oculus Rift acquisition. But it seems to me that this has more to do with Microsoft worried about Google Glass or sort of being in that product genre than anything else. It's this company called Osterhout Design Group, and they do basically glasses that are sort of akin to Google Glass. And it seems to me this is more in that product category, but it certainly, as we said last week, it certainly puts a lot of pressure on Microsoft to do something interesting with Xbox hardware, because I feel like with Sony's Project Morpheus and the Oculus Rift getting so much ink, they really are not pushing the excitement lever as much as these other technologies are.
All I can say is that if come end of tonight we find out that Comcast bought Facebook, I'm going to quit doing this show, because it doesn't matter what we talk about. People just buy things.
Well, I mean, another big part of this discussion this week has been about how we've created a situation in this country where these tech startups really are just exist to be purchased by bigger companies. And that's a whole other discussion that we could have on a different show that seems problematic to me in a large sense, that the innovation is only being demonstrated to be bought up and give IP protection to these giant monolithic corporations. And that's a little terrifying. I don't think that's the case with Facebook in this particular instance, but it certainly is troubling to me.
Well, that's just Star Wars Episode 1. There's always a bigger fish. You know what I mean? Like Lucas was onto something with that.
Oh, yeah. Episode 1 is your go-to Star Wars movie for life lessons. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to hear what the people have to say about this particular story, because this was huge. I mean, I literally got flooded with submissions with hashtag DLCSOTW. And there's a lot of people on the phones already that want to talk about it. So I want to take a call. We have somebody from the 269 area code. What do you think about this? Are you excited about Oculus, or does this give you a sour taste in your mouth?
Initially, I was kind of like offset by it. I read that and I was kind of like, I don't know about this, but I started to think about all the good things that can come from it. I mean, obviously, they're going to have a lot more money now. They're going to be able to get more people working on it. It hopefully come out sooner. In the end, it might even be cheaper for everybody, but it's hard to say with a company like Facebook what they're going to do, what their plans are. But I hope they're just in it for, like, you know, the investment in this, you know. This is the future we're gaming, and I think a lot of entertainment is going.
Now, would you be more or not more, but would you be less likely to purchase this device simply because it's owned by Facebook?
No, I was almost a guaranteed buy when I first started hearing about the Oculus. This is something I've been waiting for, like, ever since I read, like, Ready Player One. I was like, I need this technology, and this feels like this is where it's going.
Yeah, man. I think all this year of VR stuff is the best publicity ever for Ready Player One. I mean, the guy who wrote that is like, "Wee! I'm the poster child for everybody's best case scenario future," which is awesome. It's a great book too. I also think it's funny that can't remember what I was going to say. I lost my train of thought there. I had another point to make, but anyway, Christian, what do you think about this?
I mean, I feel like I've said it, right? I don't know.
You're not. Are you less likely to buy it? That's what I mean. Are you less likely to buy it because it's Facebook owned? Or I think people. That's what I was going to say. People are complaining about, Facebook owning stuff by posting on their Facebook accounts. You know what I mean? It's like nobody's not using Facebook as they complain about Facebook. But,
sure. You know, I guess the flip side of this coin, right? Of this $2 billion acquisition and how they have this money to inject, is that for a company that has $2 billion to throw around, they also have more, way, way, way more than that to just shut a project down, right? Like, no one is stopping that. That's a concern that I think people haven't talked about. There's nothing stopping Facebook from being 2 years into this thing and just being like, nope.
Yeah, but...
Because they didn't bet the farm on it.
There's no evidence for that. I mean, I guess they have closed down things that they've purchased before, but it just doesn't seem like the case in this situation. And I don't know. I feel like your whole argument on this is Notch's argument, which is Facebook is creepy. There's no actual, it's just a weird feeling in the back of your neck.
But your whole argument is sunshine and puppies.
No, my whole argument is these guys genuinely want to create something awesome. They hired people who genuinely want to create something awesome. They got a heck of a lot of money to create something awesome. I'm excited for them to create something awesome.
I just heard puppies barking. Is that what you said? Did you say puppies and sunshine?
All right, I'm gonna take another call, but first we have to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. I love Squarespace. I use it literally every single day. My website, jeffcanada.com, was created on Squarespace, is hosted by Squarespace. I use Squarespace to update it. It is the easiest, the best, the coolest way to create a really interesting, great-looking website. It's an all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your website, and you can get a free trial and 10% off by going to squarespace.com and using our offer code, which is GROK, G-R-O-K, GROK. Don't forget that. GROK is the offer code to get you 10% off. It really helps us out. Squarespace is constantly updating their platform, the new features, new designs, more support. They have beautiful templates for you to start with so your website doesn't look like every other website on the web. And they have tons of style options for you to adjust. So even with the template, your website isn't going to look like every other person that selected that template. It is a great way to easily create your own space online. Everything's drag and drop, which is really my favorite part. You don't have to code to do it. It's drag and drop. It's what you see is what you get. WYSIWYG design. It's so easy to add content from your desktop and even rearrange elements of content within the page. And Squarespace makes sure your site automatically looks great on any device because every Squarespace website has its own unique mobile design. You can easily connect Twitter, Facebook, even if you think they're evil, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, and Google, and many more web and social services. On your site, Squarespace has e-commerce on their platform. So if you want to set up shop and sell things, you can do that in just a few minutes. It's so easy to use. Honestly, I have personal experience. I've been using it for, gosh, probably almost 10 years now. But if you need some help, even if the easy site is a little intimidating, there's over 70 Squarespace employees on their customer care team, which is based in New York, and they're available for live chat during the week, and they have some of the fastest, best email support throughout the day and night. I can tell you I've used it before. I've been like baffled by something. They are so helpful and so easy. You can try Squarespace for free, not just free sign up with a credit card. This is no credit card, as free can be. And then if you decide to purchase, it starts at just $8 a month. That's crazy. That includes a domain name. And if you sign up for a year, and you can get 10% off and support our show by using that promo code GROK, G-R-O-K. Thank you to Squarespace. We really appreciate their support. I love these guys. They've been sponsoring my shows for many years now, and I am so happy that that's the case because I can genuinely recommend them from firsthand experience. So go to squarespace.com, check it out, and use our promo code GROK, G-R-O-K. Okay, I want to take – this is such a big story. I want to stay on it for a little while here and take another call because I want to hear what the people think – about Oculus. 843, you're on the air. What do you think about Squarespace, I'm on that mode, Facebook acquiring Oculus? Are you, you guys, you the heebie-jeebies like Notch?
Well, first of all, I love Squarespace.
Yeah.
Second awesome. Of all, you know, I think that we're missing the point a little bit. The Facebook issue is this. They have the opportunity to really go beyond the gaming space, and I think that's really interesting in a way that someone like Valve wouldn't. In a way that like Valve wouldn't or somebody like that. I think that the opportunity for Oculus beyond the gaming space is really what's more interesting for me. When you look at something like, you know, the Wii, for example, people bought it. They liked it for a little while. They liked the experience, but they didn't continue selling the software, you know. And so I'm not sure
the gaming space is really where Oculus is going to continue to go.
Interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that, the Oculus had always stated that they wanted to use VR for lots of different applications. And I think that that's exciting. But you're right. I mean, there's talk of, hey, even Sony is saying we're not going to use, Sony's debuting Project Morpheus as a console peripheral, but they're also saying, hey, you're going to be able to use it to, virtually check out hotel rooms. You're going to, visit Mars, whatever. Guy, what do you think? Are you excited about VR being a more than just a video game peripheral?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The thing that's happened the last week is that Oculus Rift has lost some indie cred with the Minecraft thing, with the Notch thing, and so one of the interesting things that's happened tangentially to Oculus is all of these other Kickstarter projects where people, because it's an open platform at the moment, people have gone, right, we're going to create. I remember covering one. I don't know if it was funded or not, but it was called Atlas. It was called the Atlas, and it was a holodeck style virtual reality. So the thing about Oculus Rift right now is that you've got to be tethered to the PC. And so what one guy did was he put the PC in a backpack, and then you would attach an iPhone or an Android phone to the front to your chest, and it would look down at AR style symbols on the floor, and then it would be able to track your movement in the space. Hopefully that explanation is easy for you guys to imagine, but it basically meant that you were freed of the tether of the current Oculus technology. And the thing that Facebook has a track record of is making closed platforms for games and changing the rules very, very quickly when it suits them. I mean, obviously that affected Zynga quite a lot. And I hope that doesn't happen again. I hope they keep it. I mean, they've said that they're going to keep it, as it is. And like you said, the guys are going to stay in their current offices and have that whole open ethos. But I think the thing that has been affected by the Facebook buyout is that Oculus isn't indie and cool anymore. And I know from covering indies is that they're very fickle and they want to be associated with the cool thing at the moment, which I think is still PC gaming in general. But I think that this Facebook buyout might have affected the cool credibility of Oculus Rift, not to a massive degree, but it's certainly something that should be in the back of their minds.
No, I think that is a great point. I really do. And that's kind of when I was framing it early on as a PR situation. I think Notch, as mainstream as Minecraft has become, he still has this cool guy, indie developer cred, and him coming out and saying, I'm out, means, I think, is representative of the thing you're talking about, which is that Oculus was this grassroots Kickstarter darling that felt counterculture, and it was like, what the people want is to play with virtual reality, and no big company is giving it to us, and so we're going to fund it ourselves and let's make it happen. And then all of a sudden now it's like, oh, the man has their grubby hands on it. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, right, Christian? That distaste of that.
Yeah, and it's along the lines of, gamers wanted Oculus, and I think we were gamers were perfectly happy with it being a niche product. And now it's like, well, this is going to get your mom to use it, and your grandma to use it, and your dog to use it, and this will get it in front of non-gamers. To some extent, I think the concern there is the same concern that gamers have when Tomb Raider launches with multiplayer, when that was announced, right? Like that. Tomb Raider is a great game, but the concern, or The Last of Us had multiplayer, or Uncharted, or whatever, right? Where the concern is they're going to potentially resources from the thing that I want. And this is a very selfish view, but, we all succumb to that a lot of the time. The thing I want is going to realize less of its potential because they'll be focusing some, part, all energies on this other thing that's going to make this thing that I'm excited about less interesting to me. And so
it's like Baron says in the chat room, that band was cool until they got that label deal.
But see, that's not the same thing. I understand that sick burn, but it's not the same thing. The real concern there, as a guy that used to be real into music, bro, you should see my vinyl collection. the concern is there. The truth of that joke is that, yes, now you have label money and they're going to come in and play with your sound and say, look, our AR guy says that this is what's hot right now. We're going to tweak like this and we're going to add Fergie to the Black Eyed Peas. And they became an international success. But I totally understand if early Black Eyed Peas fans hate the way that their sound changed.
I'm too nerdy to understand your analogy. I'm sorry. our last caller brought up Nintendo, and it's interesting. Meanwhile, Nintendo's big news story of this week was that we're working on non-wearable tech that will monitor your health, because that's what gamers have been clamoring for. I don't know. I think it could be this could be a cool thing, but you know, this goes with their big theme for the next 10 years that Iwata has announced, saying it will be all about enhancing the quality of life through entertainment, which will have a large part of that will be health. So they're saying, you know what, that heart sensor thing that we were going to have stick on your finger, that didn't work. Oh, so what we're going to do is have a heart sensor that doesn't stick on your finger, and we're going to show it before March 31st, 2016, and the world is going to be excited. No, nobody's excited.
Okay. No, I've been going on about that health thing for so long. I think with the Oculus, though, it's really like, if you're like a futurologist and you want to look at it. I mean, you've already got kids who've grown up with touchscreen technology who have, you know, who look at you know, that as the natural, that you give them a newspaper or a magazine and they start swiping. They don't understand it. I think within the next 10 years, it's probably big picture stuff, and it may never happen. But I think, you know, from my perspective at least, virtual reality definitely has that potential to overtake traditional display forms, I guess, and for kids in 10 years time to look at just staring at a screen as kind of very backwards. And, you know, obviously virtual reality is a bit more difficult to do on the move. I could just imagine trying to do it on the bus or on the tube or something, but, you know, it's definitely got that potential. So I think it's going to be big over the next few years.
Maybe Facebook just wanted to buy it because it's something that has to do with a face.
Someone very astutely in the chat, I think they're a little bit further up, pointed out that that Zuckerberg felt like he'd missed out on the mobile market and got into that too late. So he's just trying to get into this now while it's still kind of, you know, bubbling under the surface, which is a very, very good point. I'll search through and see if I can find out who that was.
Oh, it is a great point. And I think there's definitely a way to view this as a very panicky response from Facebook. They seem to be throwing money at anything that can try to make them stay relevant. So that's, you know, not to be overlooked as well.
Right.
What were we going to say, Christian?
Oh, I mean, I think the flip side to some extent of this, of people's feelings for this, is the other big news, or I think big news that just happened today.
Is this your story of the week? Sorry, I was going to ask you.
Yeah, this is the content. I mean, obviously, Facebook ruining Oculus is the biggest story of the week. I got to stay on point. But this is the other. If there were another big thing, this is it. And it's that my dad, Phil Spicer, was named Phil Spencer was named head of Xbox, right? And that's getting positive reaction, mostly positive reaction for gamers, because this is an appointment or moving up the corporate chain of someone that gamers feel like gets them. And I feel like that's the opposite of Facebook acquiring them. This is, oh, this is a gamer. This is somebody who's been in it. And now we're feeling good about Xbox again. And I think that's big news.
What do you think about this guy?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, if you look at Microsoft at the moment, obviously they got a new CEO. Is it Satya Nadella? He's just literally this week got the office suite on iPad, which is a big deal for a lot of people. Not myself personally, but I saw that went to number one in the free chart. But yeah, this Xbox appointment is. It's weird to, like, Microsoft's problems right now are completely image based, and something like this, for Nadella as the CEO, putting Spencer in charge is a good move in terms of rebuilding that image, rebuilding that trust, saying, look, we know we've made mistakes. If you look at, there's an interview with Phil Spencer on Kotaku, and he's saying, yeah, you know, we are focused on gaming. We did a lot of entertainment focused stuff last year, and I don't think the Xbox One's a bad console at all. I think, you know, it's had a really rough ride of it. A lot of it is Microsoft's fault. They did dig themselves a hole. It's just that they need something like this. It's only the start of building positive momentum. They've got to have a strong E3. They've got to get something like Halo on pretty soon, I think. I think Titanfall's done well for them, but they really need something like a Gears or a Halo. And I've interviewed Phil Spencer a couple of times. He's a smart guy. Actually, the first time I interviewed him, I remember some of my then GameSpot colleagues saying that he'd lost loads and loads of weight. He looks very different as to when he used to. I think he used to work in a different Microsoft department, and he'd lost a lot of weight. But he's a good guy. He's a smart guy. Don't know why I brought up the weight anecdote, but he seems like a smart guy from when I spoke to him.
stress. He's stressed out, probably.
Right. Maybe he's played lots of Kinect. I don't know. That's how I genuinely lost quite a bit of weight playing Kinect a couple of years ago. So I'm quite a Kinect defender when everyone says it's not very good, because it helped me to lose a bit of weight in conjunction with eating well and running lots.
It was good.
So yeah, Spencer's probably a better head than God. I've already forgotten his name. We went to Zynga.
Yeah. I'm blanking on his name too, but yeah.
Oh my God. Right. I'll find out. I'm sorry. Totally forgot his name.
It's all right. You brought up Titanfall, and interesting news also this week from the Titanfall camp. I love their way of dealing with cheaters, at least on the PC side. I love this idea that their fair fight, anti-cheating system that they've put into place on the PC. It doesn't ban cheaters. No. It just sticks them in a room with other cheaters, so that they have to fight amongst themselves. I love this quote. It says, hopefully the airbot cheat, excuse me, aimbot, hopefully the aimbot cheat you paid for really is the best, or these all cheater matches could be frustrating for you. Good luck. I love it. It's like, hey, you better be cheating really, really good, because everybody's cheating where you're headed. I love that. I love that.
Policy.
Right? So smart.
I think that you don't know that you're in a cheat. Well, if you're cheating, then you can probably safe to assume you're going to be in a cheater's corner, let's call it. But yeah, it's funny that they just don't tell you when you're in the cheaters matches as well. So yeah very, it's great. Brilliant. It's the best way of dealing with them, I think.
And as usual, the chat room has our back. Don Matrick is the guy.
Don Matrick, yes. Yeah, I love the stories of him afterwards when he left, of how he'd only take, you know, private jets around, and he was living the baller lifestyle, basically. And yeah, he can continue doing that on his massive salary at Zynga. But yeah, I think Phil's the right man for the job at this point in time.
I know, Guy, you were talking about another news story that was more local to your neck of the woods about these UK tax breaks. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so this is really UK focused. So apologies for everyone else that's internationally that's had this for so long. But obviously here in the UK, we've got a good heritage, I'd say, of great video game makers. I mean, just outside of London, sort of 20 minutes outside of London, there's Guildford, which has got Media Molecule. It's got Peter Molyneux. It's got what was Criterion. Unfortunately, they've kind of been disbanded. But the EA studios out there, there's loads, you know, guys that made Strike Suit Zero. So like loads and loads of developers. The guys that are making the did Joe Danger, so they're making No Man's Sky. So they're out in Guildford. Anyway, the point I'm making is that there's a great heritage of UK games developers, and they've had a rough time of it because we're traditionally a very expensive place to make games. You know, it's expensive to hire programmers and all the rest of it. The skill set is that's required. So for the longest time, we've seen like very talented developers leave to places that are a little bit more tax friendly. Obviously, Ubisoft in Canada doing lots of great stuff, and it's very much based around the fact that they get favorable tax breaks from the Canadian government. And you see, obviously, FIFA after, I think FIFA might have overtaken Call of Duty this year. Obviously, Grand Theft Auto has overtaken them all. And again, that's predominantly made in Edinburgh. So, but we've been struggling because we've not had tax breaks. So we've had developers move to prominent UK developers, including a couple of the guys that head up FIFA, leave from the UK to go over to Canada. But just this week, the European Commission has approved tax breaks for the UK video games industry. Basically, the projects, like other projects internationally, they've got to pass a cultural test. So you've got to have a UK protagonist. You've got to have a Dick Van Dyke-like Cockney geezer in your game, or the UK flag or something. It's the cultural tests seem fairly arbitrary, but as long as it's basically, you know, based in the UK, it promotes UK culture, then you're quite likely to get this tax break. Apparently, it's going to affect about 25% of projects that are made in the UK. But if you follow the UK video games industry at all, you would have seen this going on for years and years and years, and it's important. I mean, you know, Grand Theft Auto it's over here, the interviews that I do in the mainstream media, when Grand Theft Auto comes out, it's still very much focused around the violence in that game. I did a I did an interview on Channel 4 News where it was just one of the big news networks in the UK, just all about violence towards women, some of which wasn't even there. The presenter wouldn't even make an effort to play the game. You know, I took in my PlayStation 3 and I was going to try and, you know, convince him that this is a great work of art, really a great work of cultural significance. And, you know, I would say to these guys that this is the most important game of the year. And not just that, it's a cultural high point for the year. This is a whole new generation Scarface or The Godfather, but still the debate is around violence here in the UK media. And it's really important that we start to promote video games as, you know, as more than that. Obviously there is a massively violent part of Grand Theft Auto, and I can understand that would turn a lot of people off, but we need to start heralding the fact that GTA is a massive success. And it's really interesting that GTA is as big as it is, because it's, you know, it's obviously pastiching American culture, and it took like five or six originally British guys to go over to New York and kind of, I don't know what you guys think about this as Americans, but
they get that perspective. They get an outsider's perspective. I think that's what kind of the secret sauce is, actually, for that.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you know, I love GTA 5. I know it's got its detractors, and I would like to see Rockstar do something a little bit more daring with its characters. We're still playing essentially as the same characters. Although I did speak to someone recently who'd sort of noted that Michael, the character of Michael in the game, who's a sort of, you know, retired crook who's getting a bit sort of, he's grown older and he's gotten, you know, he's getting pulled back into the crime world. That kind of reflects in a way, although tangentially, in a way what Rockstar have done. You know, they've been doing this for a while now, and they're feeling older and they're feeling more kind of, you know, there was a story in Playboy at the end of last year, which was, you know, Sam Houser's now collecting bikes and cycling to work, and, you know, sort of a far cry from the heyday of all the rock star parties that you used to hear about. Anyway, I've gone off on a massive tangent here. I'm sorry.
No, but along the lines of the violence thing, you know, in our local politics here in California, we had one of these guys that always rattles his saber about that kind of thing with video games, Leland Yee, the Democratic senator here, just be exposed as a major hypocrite. He's going to be voted out of the Senate, and he's being prosecuted for, you know, organizing these incredibly horrific gun trafficking deals with the New Jersey mob. So, you know, maybe games aren't the biggest problem.
But no, Jeff, have you heard his defense? It's GTA made him do it. So it's a sound one. Yeah, it's video games' fault still.
That's my story. Anyway, I can't convince you guys. I don't think that it's bigger than Oculus Rift and Facebook. But hey, if you're in the UK and you're a game developer, at least you can develop your games a bit more cheaply now, which is obviously always a big deal.
Yeah, actually, a very good thing. Any other stories you wanted to bring up, Christian, or should we move on to the playlist?
I think we can. I think we can move on. I mean, there are other things happening, but I don't think anything is, you know, I mean, obviously, the story of the week is the Deus Ex fan film. But after that,
did you dig it? Did you watch it?
I got halfway through, honestly, before it seemed.
Oh my God, you're such the average internet user. 12 minutes.
Well, no, let me finish. It wasn't the length. It seemed it's very well done. And if you're interested in Deus Ex, definitely check it out. But I guess I should say it's very well done for an internet video hosted on Machinima. Like it had that look, right? Like the blood splatters, I'm pretty sure, you know, they look like they're from Action Essentials or something like that. And so, it did not keep my attention past 7 minutes. What about you?
Well, you really should watch the second half, because it's where all the good stuff happens.
I have not watched it. I have to put my hands up. Is it as good as Dan Trachtenberg's Portal film? No, that's the question.
Nothing as good as Dan Trachtenberg.
Nothing is as good as that.
Friend of the show, Dan Trachtenberg's amazing Portal film. Nothing could touch that. But it's, you know, it's actually, I thought it was pretty neat. All right, let's go to the playlist.
This guy's a real auteur, the guy that's made it. He's written, directed, produced, edited, and starred in it as Adam Johnson.
Yeah, no, that's pretty impressive. I would say he did a pretty good job. I'm very curious how much he spent on it, because it looks expensive. Anyway, the playlist is what I'm calling our next segment, which is finding out what's on our current playlist. Guy, what have you been playing? What's on your playlist?
So you guys will think I'm really backwards. I've just spent, because I did some BAFTA judging. So the BAFTA Games Awards were a couple of weeks ago, and I sat on the panel for the best British game, which was won by GTA at the end of the day, which was an interesting one because there's like 1,000 people made that game. I think 300 of them are in Edinburgh. So there's another 700 somewhere else in the world. I think every other Rockstar studio contributed to it. So I've been going back and kind of playing through some of the games because the BAFTA process is so involved. There's 15 games on the shortlist, and then I get in a room with some other developers and we whittle it down, and there's a big debate, like a 4-hour debate, to try and get that final list down. I've gone back and I finished The Last of Us, and then I finished The Last of Us, the DLC. What's the DLC called? I'm sorry, guys. My brain is totally fried today. Left Behind.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely one of the best DLCs I've ever played. It's absolutely fantastic. I mean, if you're interested in that story at all, you have to have finished the main game, really. But just so, there's not much action in it, but in terms of storytelling, it's absolutely phenomenal. It's really, some really touching elements. You get to learn a bit more about Ellie's background and the leading up to her involvement in the game. I'm struggling to say this without spoilers, but some really touching moments. I remember seeing on Facebook when the DLC came out, which I think was end of last year, maybe earlier this year, lots of Facebook posts of a photo booth moment from the game. And it's just so well done, so touching. I think it's a bit of a shame what's happened to Naughty Dog recently. Obviously, you had Amy Hennig leave under suspicious circumstances, some might say, and then the director of the next Uncharted has just left for Riot Games, but I think it's
because Riot Games has all the money.
It does, yeah, it does. Like Facebook is splashing that cash around.
Yeah, but, Riot could have bought the Oculus.
But the two leads of The Last of Us, I think as long as Naughty Dog have got those guys, then they're, and obviously the rest of the team as well. That's a massive disservice to the massive team that makes that game. But yeah, I absolutely cannot say enough good things about The Last of Us, and the downloadable content, definitely worth buying if you enjoyed the main game. I it took me ages to finish the Walking Dead. I kind of paused halfway through.
Season one or season two?
Episode four. Season one, yeah, episode four. So it took me literally probably about a year to come back to it for whatever reason. No good reason there. But again, I must be in a mood for deeply emotional personal stories about young girls and what they're going
and
through.
Zombies.
Just a weird time. And zombies, yeah. Well, in this walkers and whatever, they're infected in Last of Us, but if you want to get technical. But yeah, they were just another episode five of The Walking Dead in particular. I think they did a really good job. I went straight on and played 400 Days afterwards and actually live streamed that on Twitch. And yeah, really, really great job. Someone mentioned it in the Twitch comments that they're holding off on season two until the whole of season two is released, which I think is a good idea because then you can attack it in one go. I think that's the new with, you know, it's the same in TV, Netflix, House of Cards. Right. That's the new normal. You want to binge, you want to go through it all in one weekend. So so I might do the same and hold off. And then just last night, I've been going through this thing where I missed a couple of really big, I didn't miss, but I never finished a couple of big games. So one, it's basically my, whatever's at the top of Metacritic on PC. I've got a really kick-ass, got the top-of-the-line PC that I want to really sort of put through its paces. Played through Crysis 3, pretty game, but not much going on underneath. So I'm going back to other games that I missed. One is Bioshock Infinite, and I'm playing that at the moment. And then the other is Dishonored, which I need to go. That's kind of the best PC game from on Metacritic, at least, from 2011, it would be. No, sorry, 2012. And I know there's a lot of backlash towards Bioshock Infinite, and there seem to be, critically at least, among the critical fraternity of journalists in the UK, there seems to be this collective feeling, the sort of Assassin's Creed 3 effect, where everyone a couple of months later said, yeah, you know, we scored that game too highly, and it's not all that. But I have to say, playing through the first sort of 3-4 hours of Bioshock Infinite last night, I didn't want to go to bed. I got past a rescue, hopefully there's no spoilers here, but everyone knows about the Elizabeth character. I got to the bit with Elizabeth. And man, I couldn't stop playing it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. So I'm yet to discover the backlash bit of Bioshock Infinite, where everyone goes, "Yeah, maybe that's not as good as the other Bioshocks that we thought it was." So I'd be interested to know what you guys think.
the first half of that game is truly magnificent, and I think that at least for my money, that it's the second half and even the last third that wanes, and it feels not nearly as polished and finely crafted as the first half. I famously called the first hour to 2 hours, something like that. I called the first 2 hours my game of the year, which I think it probably could have been, but unfortunately, the last 6 or 7 hours, it didn't have that same level of magic.
So we'll go after this, we'll go off the chat, so spoilers, and you can tell me at what point I just stop playing, okay? Like, just...
I don't think... the ending is really interesting, especially from a just sort of a storytelling perspective of where they go with it is really freaking interesting. So I would recommend you finish it. I just, temper your expectation. That's all I'm saying.
I'd heard that. And again, the DLC is supposed to, the Burial at Sea is supposed to be very good as well. So I'll get through it. I'll go on the DLC. And I'm actually a big Battlefield fan as well. So the latest Naval Strike DLC has just hit PC. As I said, I'm a PC gamer at the moment. So I'm going to be, as soon as we're done with this, I'll be firing that up as well. So I've been pretty busy recently, but with games from the past. I haven't been playing Dark Souls 2 or Titanfall or what else has been released recently. Thief, any of that sort of stuff I haven't really been getting involved with.
How about you, Christian? What's on your playlist?
So I think, and I really should have looked, I think Infamous Second Son might be the first game I platinum. I'm not a completionist in that respect, typically, when I play games. But
it's just that good, right?
I am really enjoying it. I am taking my time with it. I'm doing every side mission. And I'm also, as I play it, trying to wrap my head around why I enjoy it so much more than Dead Rising 3, which is a well-made game. And for some reason, I just kind of got burnt out on. And I think it's because I prefer the mode of transportation and being a superhero more than surviving. I also think I like games where I can clear out an area of enemies. And in Dead Rising, in the nature of a zombie game, that's not as possible. It's so much fun. I know you finished it. And I'm really, really enjoying it. And then it's interesting what Guy said about...
Can I make you without any spoilers whatsoever, I just suggest that you finish the main storyline before you clear out every area? I think going back after you finish the main storyline and having more stuff to do after that is a good idea.
Well, it might be too late, but I appreciate the recommendation. and then I think it's interesting what Guy said about Walking Dead Season 1. People that listen to Week and Confirmed, I loved that game and was, not alone and being a big champion of it. And I immediately bought the season pass for Season 2. And for whatever reason, I'm just not that into it. I blew through episode 1 and I've had episode 2 since, it came out, and I imagine I'm close to the end because they're not super long episodes, but I don't have the motivation to go finish it. The story's been great. I don't know what it is. I think about to play a game and it's, on the very end of my list of a game to go sit down and play. And I'm not sure what the reason is, but
did the season 1 have the shock factor or the, I don't know, obviously there've been other Telltale games, but did it have that? It might've just had that coming out of the blue impact that season 2, there's higher expectations, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, it certainly was more novel, whereas season 2 is, more of the same in a good way, but it's like, what you're getting into. It's going to be tough, excruciating choices that you make as you play through these uncomfortable situations. That's probably it. I don't know. And then also, I always have Ollie Ollie still sitting on my Vita that I go back to and play levels that I'm stuck on for a little bit until I want to break the thing, until I want to throw it across the room. Where are you, Jeff? Have you gone back? Has your Titan continued to fall now that you cleared out Infamous?
Too much to play. I have been completely addicted to Diablo 3. I finished the Reaper of Souls Act 5 content with my barbarian, who I hit level 70, and then I started a crusader, and I'm now in almost level 30 on him. I just adore Diablo 3. It is the perfect gaming loop for me. I think they've fixed everything about that game. It's divine and amazing. But now Now I also have Elder Scrolls Online, which the early access launched yesterday, and I've just barely started. And it already I adore, just with a few hours in. I mean, there's clearly a lot of opinion yet to be formed, but I just love how it doesn't look or feel like an MMO. It has its own – it feels like an Elder Scrolls game. It feels like a single-player game, and I just love – I play all the MMOs basically that come out, and they tend to get a little cookie cutter. They tend to all feel a little bit like WoW in their own way. And yeah, there's differences here and there with things and innovations here and there, but this truly feels completely different. And especially the combat, which is, you know, an action RPG combat system. It's not looking at cooldowns and stuff. It's great, and I'll have lots more to talk about next week on the show when I've put a lot more hours into it. But it looks great. It's so good.
I'm glad to hear that, because I thought that when I played at E3 or Gamescom, where it was like it's Elder Scrolls. It doesn't feel like a cookie cutter MMO, like you said. But I don't know. I can't help but think it might not have the positive momentum going in. I think if the reviews are strong, then it'll do well. But just right now, I think everyone's still a little bit down on it, or at least in my experience. It might just be a British thing, British reservedness thing. But
it's going to be interesting. Go ahead.
Sorry, I've got a copy of the game as well, so I will join you after this, Jeff. You have to let me know what server you're on, or however that works.
Well, I'm on there's one US server, I think, and I'm on that.
Right.
I think it might be a victim of being shown too early, because was it E3 2012 when it came out and it looked like a steaming pile of dog poo, right? Like no one
it
was
has
impressed.
Come a long way.
And it was like a 45-minute non-playable video where people were falling asleep in the hot demo room.
We were queuing. I remember, Jeff. We were queuing. There was me, you, and Dan, I think, at E3 last year, and we went to see Bethesda did a long demo of their survival horror game, and they did a long demo of Wolfenstein, which I thought looked actually really good. Yeah. And you guys were really excited to play Elder Scrolls, and there was like an hour-long session afterwards, but I had another appointment I had to run off to, and you guys were just so excited to play it.
Yeah, I mean, we're all MMO freaks, and that's who I've been playing with. My gaming group is all diving into ESO, and it'll be interesting to see if it stands the test of time or if we all hop over to WildStar in June when it launches, because I think all of us are really excited about WildStar as well. So I'll have lots to report on upcoming episodes. But I think we should also – we had some business to do. We have the Final Four edition of March Madness, so let's get right
– March Madness.
There it is, March Madness. I don't know, Guy, if you have been following our exploits on March Madness, but we have had a NCAA tournament style bracket established with the populated by video games, and they have been facing off each other in head to head matchups, and we are down to the final four. There has been controversy, there's been anger, there's been excitement, just like the real NCAA tournament, I might add. But we have two big matchups to determine the winners of today, and we're going to need your help to do it to get to the final championship round next week. And then we're going to award some people some prizes based on their predictions way back at the beginning of March in their brackets. So, without further ado...
I'm not sure I can take this pressure. I'm not sure I can do this.
There's a lot of pressure. Oh, no. There's a lot of pressure. We couldn't even handle it in the United States. We had to go across the pond to get your opinion because it was so intense here in the States.
That's big.
So the first matchup we need to discuss is Super Mario 64, the number one seed, facing off against the number three seed. This is in the Kanata bracket of Half-Life 2. So Super Mario 64 versus Half-Life 2. There can be only one winner. Guy Cocker, what is your opinion?
So shall I plead the case for or against each one? Which one shall I just pick? Super Mario 64 and then say why it should win?
Is that the one you think should win?
No, I don't actually. This is so difficult. I think Super Mario 64 has been, you know, obviously more influential. It's the first 3D Mario. It was an absolute system seller when it came out. But I think Life 2 stands the test of time better, and that's probably the reason I would go for it. Having played it fairly recently, it's still a very good show. It's in some respects, it feels a little bit behind, but maybe it's only because I've become so accustomed to modern shooters and massively multiplayer and all that sort of stuff. But I would say Half-Life 2 is probably overall the better game, whereas Nintendo's really iterated and improved upon that sort of 3D Mario format. So I would go with Half-Life 2.
Christian, what do you think, Half-Life 2 or Super Mario 64?
Oh man, there are no winners here. There are only losers. I voted for Half-Life 2. I think Guy's reasoning is pretty on point. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, what is this contest? Is it most influential? Is it best? Is it?
And it's the answer madness. Is,
exactly. It doesn't matter. I mean, Super Mario 64 went pro, so technically got disqualified for losing their amateur status. Half-Life 2 to me is just the better game. It has, and I gave it the full PR pitch last week if you haven't heard it. But I mean, the way it has like a horror game in there, the way it introduces the gravity gun and totally flips the script on what you've been doing, the way it tells story without your character ever saying a single word, the way it makes you feel for an NPC are all things that make it a better game, in my opinion, than Mario 64. Mario 64 is revolutionary and incredible, but I voted for Half-Life 2.
I would actually vote for Half-Life 2 as well. As I have said every week, I don't think Mario 64 is the best Mario. It is actually one of my least favorite Marios. I still think it's a great, groundbreaking, important, awesome game. But Half-Life 2 is in my top three games of all time. It changed the way I thought about games. It's a spectacular, genre-defining title whose sequel we still await with bated breath. Meanwhile, we get sequels to Mario every 5 minutes, but that doesn't have any bearing on my vote. Let's
often
find out what
very
the people...
good sequels, though. Often very good sequels.
Oh,
Mario World on Wii U is very good.
No doubt, no doubt. I want to hear what the people have to say. However, we got someone on the line from 413. What do you think, Half-Life 2 or Super Mario 64? I think we may. I've found somebody sleeping. Are you sleeping? Are you there? Okay. Super Mario 64 or Half-Life 2?
Half-Life 2. Without a doubt. It blends, you know, first of all, the main physics, right? With the storytelling and the gameplay, and I think it's all around just a fantastic game. I played it 4 years after it came out, and I still thought it was one of the best games I'd ever played.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement there. Let's find out what the votes have to say. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of votes came in, and they disagree with us. Super Mario 64, 56.1%. Half-Life 2, 43.5%.
I'm okay with that. I mean, I disagree, obviously,
as
but
do I.
I understand, and I'm okay with that. I mean, Mario 64 is incredible, right? And it remains. The graphics don't hold up particularly well, but they hold up better than like some PlayStation 1 era polygonal games, and it still controls well, right? I mean, when they re-released it on the DS, that was a little wonky, but the game was still very fun to play, and people got into it and played Virtual Console releases now with a better analog than the over time became gritty Nintendo 64 analog stick. I mean, it's tried and true. It introduced the Mario games where you finish the game, but then there was still more to do. You know, the back half of that game is fun, getting all the stars. You know, I can go with the people on this easily.
Yeah. I wonder if we can find somebody online that would, it's got to be one of the people on the line here that voted in this way. I'm going to ask 949 here. Did you vote for Super Mario 64?
Amazing.
That was awesome. Baba Booey. Baba Booey. Baba Booey. Okay. Well, so Mario 64 progresses epically with an argument that no one can refute. So the other side of the bracket, the Christian Spicer side of the bracket, the number one seed, Last of Us, facing off against the number 7 seed, Portal. Guy Cocker.
Oh, this is a more difficult one for me, I think. I think actually having played The Last of Us just so recently, that game is absolute. I mean, I think storytelling in general in games is still pretty bad. So when something like The Last of Us comes along that has such great dialogue, such fantastic overall story, I mean, you could say that that story could be made in another medium just as well. I mean, some of the action, it does feel a little bit repetitive when you're, you know, you bit of dialogue, bit of exposition, and then you have to go and sneak up on some infected, or, you know, you have to get by some clickers. Some of that stuff, it could be argued that it could be done as well in a movie. But I mean, just the emotional impact, obviously without going into too much depth, of the ending of the story and the characters of Joel and Ellie, just absolutely fantastic stuff. I mean, I really do love that game. But Portal, for me, I think I might actually, it might be the fact that it's Portal. I have very, very strong memories of playing through Portal 2 in co-op and absolutely loving that experience and just wanting more and more of it. And I know they released some DLC for it, but it kind of overshadowed the original Portal. And I think it really showed, Portal 2 showed that Valve, again, are masters of creating an amazing narrative. But when the first Portal came along, that was only, what, 2 hours long. Portal 2 kind of overshadowed it and showed that you could make a Portal game that was a usual length of game, sort of 10 hours, I think, from what I played through a bit, but that might just be me not being that clever. So as much as it pains to me to say it, because it's a really difficult one to call, I'd probably go with The Last of Us, just because I'm more of a fan of Portal 2 than I am the original Portal.
Wow. Christian, I'm guessing you're going to go with Last of Us as well, because you keep talking about that game.
I love The Last of Us. Is it weird though that as I saw, you know, this matchup and contemplated my vote, I created a very good argument for Portal? And the argument for Portal, like, The Last of Us, I think, is an amazing game. I think the storytelling is incredible. I think the voice acting and the performance of the actors and the motion capture and the animators and the artists and everybody in that game did an amazing job. I really enjoy the gameplay. I like the pacing of it. I don't have problems with the controls. But Portal is, at first in my head, this was framed as gameplay versus story. But Portal has an amazing story. Portal,
yeah,
introduced
a
us
funny,
to...
interesting, awesome story.
Yeah, and we got, you know, Portal has given us memes, and Portal gave us The Cake is a Lie, and a character, an entire voice, you know, freaking Pacific Rim, and tight gameplay that makes you feel smart in a way that you think you're figuring out the solution that is the only solution, I think I could talk myself into Portal. I think, had Last of Us not been so recent, and I had Last of Us come out 4 years ago and Portal come out this past year, I think I could have voted for Portal. But right now, my heart is still The Last of Us. But I really understand a Portal vote. It's a great game, and I don't think it needs to be longer to make it better. I think Portal 1 is better than Portal 2. They're both good.
I really think that The Last of Us is benefiting from a recent memory.
I
just played it. It feels great. It's awesome. And it's a great game. It's a great game. It wasn't even my favorite game of that year, of last year. I would never have made it go this far in the tournament. Although, let's be honest, it was up against some weak competition up to this point, at least in my opinion. I think Portal is a more transcendent game in so many ways. Last of Us is a really beautiful story, but it's sort of a simple, beautiful story. And I don't think that the mechanics of the game are particularly interesting or revolutionary, whereas Portal marries an awesome, interesting, hilarious, fun story with revolutionary mechanics.
And that marriage isn't allowed in like 48 states still.
Right, of course not. But the states that do... welcome it with open arms. So I'm voting for Portal. Let's find out what a caller has to say. We got 850 on the line. What do you think, Portal or The Last of Us?
I know your area code. Don't mess this up.
Yeah, I am going to preface this as I'm a PC gamer. So Portal, good story, really good gameplay. I've gotten to play The Last of Us. I hate to say it, maybe it's because I'm used to mouse and keyboard for shooters, but it didn't really control that well. And since video games are about gameplay first, and Portal also has a really good story, I have to say Portal.
I didn't hear anyone on the phone. Was there anyone there? Weird. Must have had a drop call. Let's move on to the next one.
You heard Portal, which is what I heard as well. And we're going to see what the vote has to say. It looks like Last of Us, 39.2%. Portal, 60.1%.
Wow.
For Portal, crushing The Last of Us, actually, I would say.
Wow. I'm surprised that sort of Valve fan base didn't come out for Half-Life 2, though.
I agree. I'm surprised. This really could have been a all-Valve final, and neither Valve game got past the final four. But, you know, strong games all around. This has really been a really fun, controversial, awesome thing. I hope you guys have been enjoying it, because I have. I got a lot of great feedback between the angry feedback. There's people who are now think that Tetris has been robbed. It's a whole thing.
So we're Mario 64 versus Portal is the final?
Mario 64 versus Portal. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I said neither Valve game made it, but you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could have been an all Valve, but now it's, Mario 64 versus Portal. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how many people predicted that. We have a bunch of brackets that people filled out. I wonder how many people predicted that.
The mirrors in Mario 64 are kind of portals into New World, so really.
Hey, good point. Good point. I really appreciate you helping us out with that battle, Guy. We needed an... and perspective from across the pond. Next week we have, I thought it would be good to have somebody be here for the final that has a long history of games and is a video game luminary from way back. So we got Victor Lucas coming next week to help us out with the final. I'm excited for that. But now it is time.
You should get Shigeru Miyamoto and Gabe on the show.
There you go.
And decide their favorite.
That would be amazing. If I could swing that. Do you have Shigeru's cell phone number?
I'll just have a look. I'll have a look in my mobile. Yeah, I'll give Shigsy a call.
I appreciate that. Okay. It is tabletop time. Tabletop time. Tabletop time. That's a new different bumper that was sent in this week. Oh my gosh, where's the name of the person that sent it in? I lost it. I apologize. Let me see if I can find it. But I liked last week's bumper. I like this week's bumper. I'm torn. What do you think, Christian? Which one should we go with?
Liked last week's just because it's a little quicker. It gets into it. This one, I'm like, what is that? Silence? Is that clicking? What is that? I want that quick to the punch tabletop time.
You were quick to the punch tabletop time. All right, Guy, are you a board gaming guy? Do you do any tabletop gaming?
I really like The Sting. I thought that was a great sting, whoever made that. And no, I'm traditionally not, but I was talking to someone who I'm going to get into D&D with, although he's lapsed. He's a producer. He's a very prestigious producer of a series called Horizon in the BBC, and so he was talking to me about it. But like I say, there's this video game bar that's just open just down the road from me. So I was playing. It's not really a table. It's kind of a tabletop game, but it's called Super Rhino. It's from Germany, and it's essentially like Jenga, but with a small plastic rhino. But best just to Google it. It's taken over my life. Drinking games involved. It's pretty special. But I'm going to give this place a plug because it's a really great bar. Yeah, if you're in the sort of Dalston, Stoke Newington area, just Google Loading Bar. There's a tabletop night there every Saturday. I'm going to go this Saturday and get inducted into the ways of tabletop gaming because I met some great guys down there. So no, epic. I'm not traditionally, but I'm going to get more into it.
Love it. Also, that sting bumper was created by The Gravy Hammers. His YouTube channel is youtube.com/TheGravyHammers. We appreciate him sending that in. This is a big week for tabletop stuff because the fifth of April is International Tabletop Day. And that was started by our friends over at Geek and Sundry. Will Wheaton's tabletop show is a lot of fun, and they are promoting people getting into board games and card games. And on April 5th, everyone around the world is invited to play board games. And they have some really cool events. You can check out Tabletop Day, I think, is the .com is their URL. And they have lots of stuff probably in your area. And if you just venture out into your local board gaming store, I recommend that most of them are having great events for that to promote board games. And an issue that came up last week with you, Christian, when you were saying, oh, you know, I sometimes don't like, you know, slamming my family members to the ground with a, you know, vicious tabletop strategy. I don't like being bad and competitive. It echoes the sentiment I got on Twitter from at Dylan Foe, who said, thanks to you, I have a small board gaming group, loving Pandemic. Any others that scratch that co-op itch? I think that the solution to your problem, Christian, perhaps, or one solution, is to try co-op games. That's it's a big exploding segment of board gaming that allows people to play board games together and be cooperative rather than competitive. Pandemic, the one that at Dylan Thoe mentioned, is a great starter. It's kind of the poster child for cooperative games. It wasn't the first, but it's one of the best. And it's all about stopping international diseases from spreading around the world. And you have to travel around the world with your teammates and use your special powers that you have based on the role that you choose to squelch out these diseases, to research cures. And then, and meanwhile, the game is spreading diseases rampantly around. And so you have to make sure you don't let a disease go unchecked and uncontrolled, because it'll kill too much of the population and you end up losing the game. So it's everybody playing against the board, which is really fun. And I'll mention a couple of other great co-op games if you're interested in trying out these, especially for Tabletop Day. One of my favorites is this game called Space Cadets, which is a fantastic idea. It's basically piloting the Starship Enterprise, although it's not themed Star Trek, but it's the idea of piloting a spacecraft with your teammates, and each person has a different role to play that's very similar to Star Trek. So there's an engineering person, there's a communications person, there's a captain, there's a science officer, and each player, you're playing in real time with each other, and each player has a very specific mini game that they need to accomplish within the time limit to help the ship achieve its goals. So what I'm doing playing as the weapons officer is very different than what you're doing playing as the science officer, but we're both contributing to making our ship, plotting our ship to the galaxy, fighting off bad guys, mining asteroids. It's really cool. And there's a new version of it actually that it just came out called Space Cadets Dice Duel, which is even crazier and adds rolling of dice involved. Super cool. There's another game called Fireteam. No, what is it called? It's on my shelf. It's you play as a fireman fighting a fire in a building. Oh, Fire Team Fire Rescue? No. What is this? Where is it? It's in my room. I'm looking. Anyway, but there's a ton of cooperative games. If you check Board Game Geek, it's a great resource. You can just look for cooperative games. And those are games that you don't have to be a dick to your family with. Have you ever played a cooperative game, Christian?
No, I haven't. I do think that helps with that alleviates that issue. People got back to me last week and were like, well, it just sounds like you're a sore loser. And no, I feel bad in competitive games when I win also, because
Sore loser every week in Story of the Week.
Yeah, that's true, because I'm working out, I'm blasting my pecs while we're doing Story of the Week, so I'm really sore from being a geek in sneaks.
Oh, it's Flashpoint Fire Rescue. Thanks guys in the chat room. I should just always look at the chat room instead of trying to find it on my shelf. My shelf is full of board games and I can't always find the one I want. I feel embarrassed that I couldn't come up with that. But go ahead.
This isn't a cooperative board game at all, but when you're talking, it reminded me of a game I used to play a lot when I was little. My older brother was the champion of it and always wanted to play it. Have you guys ever played Galaxy Command?
I've not, no.
No.
It's a space combat dice game, kind of along the lines of Battleship, in the sense that you have a commander that's in your, you're trying to find or blow up the other team's, other player's commander ship. So, you know, and similar to Battleship, where you sink their battleship or whatever, and you're trying to locate them. But it's a cool, you know, it's a big board, and you have little space pieces, little ships. I believe it's 2 to 4 players. And it's not a great game, but it was one of those games that, you know, when you get into something when you're little, it will always forever be nostalgic and fun. Like, I could play Galaxy Command or Fireball Island probably every weekend and have fun with it for a little bit, just because of the memories of the fun versus the quality of the game, right?
Right.
I mean, Fireball Island, instant classic.
I agree. And you can't even find it anymore. You have to buy it on eBay now. They don't make it. But, I mean, it's a very simplistic game, but super fun just because of the 3D board. That's it's really cool, too. So I really hope people who are listening give International Tabletop Day a chance, or at least even if you can't do it on the 5th, get out there and play some board games this week, because it's really fun, and I think it's very different. It provides a very different experience from playing computer games, but no less exciting and no less entertaining.
Are there places in the States where you can go and, like, you know, you can go out and play them? Because obviously it's quite expensive to buy a lot of tabletop games. Well, it can be anyway. What, like, are there places to try them out in your relative cities?
There's actually one here in Los Angeles that just opened in Glendale that is fantastic. I think it's called Game House. Yeah. But my favorite one in the world that I've been to is a place called Snakes and Lattes in Toronto, Canada. That was sort of the prototype for all these ones, and it is cool. It's a really great, well-maintained environment, awesome staff of people. You can get food there, and I think it's $5 for as long as you want to play any game you want. So nice. That's pretty great. Yeah. So yeah, if you find yourself in Toronto, Canada, I highly recommend Snakes and Latte.
I would love to find myself there, hopefully one day.
Well, we appreciate you finding yourself here with us today. It's been awesome hanging out with you and talking games. Where can people find your stuff this week if they want to hear more from you?
Oh, cheers. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. If you want to check out what I'm up to, then I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/GuyCocker. I, too, have a weekly podcast. So I usually do it with other journalists here in the UK or independent game makers, and that's available on GuyCocker.com.
Excellent. And Christian, what's up with you this week?
Well, first, it was awesome. This past Wednesday, I was in a sold-out show at the Irvine Improv, and a couple of DLC fans or friends, listeners, came by and said hi afterwards. That's always super cool. Like, if you're ever at a show, please come up and say hi if I'm hanging out afterwards. Sometimes, you know, I might need to be backstage a little longer to help break down or say goodbye to people or whatever, but please hang out, come say hi. It's always great to meet people IRL. Coming up, I do a stand-up comedy live show, and it's also a podcast on the Nerdist Network called What's New, and it's not this Tuesday, not this week, but next week. I believe that's the 8th, so if you're in LA, you should come to that. Brent Weinbach is headlining along with a special guest who I'm not allowed to name, but you know them from TV. And then if you're in LA on Thursday, the 10th, is the next Improv versus Stand-Up, which I do at UCB here in Los Angeles. And then we have a sister show in New York hosted by Boris Hyken. So if you're in New York, look for Improv versus Stand-Up. It's a show I created. And they're fun. They're good. I think that's it. Otherwise, I'll be working on my Platinum on Infamous and going against Jeff's good advice to wait to clear out the areas. I can't wait. I can't wait, Jeff. I see a shard. I got to go get it.
Oh, no. It's good to have. Get all the shards you can get. I'm just saying, don't, you know, take down the DUP things.
I can't do it.
Because it's, you're going to, I think you're going to be, whatever.
I will
but
be.
Whatever.
I will be.
I would, my other big recommendation for people playing that game, if you're just playing Infamous now, and is always enter a boss fight with extra shards that you haven't spent. Because you will likely find that you will want skills that you didn't think you had a need for before. In the middle of a boss fight, you'll be like, oh, if I only had that. And if you can spend it real quick, it's probably great. Anyway. If you want to hear my extended spoiler filled review of Infamous. You can check it out on my YouTube channel. I've been posting NLB minis three a week, and I will continue to do so, talking about all manner of things, video games, movies, TV shows, gadgets, all kinds of stuff. That's at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/KanataJeff. That's with two N's and one T. Or you can find links to it on my website at Jeff or JeffKanata.com or at Jeff Kanata on Twitter. This week on Twitter, at Orange Poser said that he would really appreciating the sponsors sponsoring our show because DLC, because of the sponsors, stands for Delivered Lacking a Charge, which we're happy about too. And we really appreciate people who have been giving us reviews on iTunes. If you like the show, it always is helpful. Give us that good review on iTunes. We certainly appreciate it. All right, that does it for this week. As always, if you want to listen live, you can check us out every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. We record live and we stream that on 5by5.tv/live. All right, guys, thanks a lot for joining us. We'll see you next week. And until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place. We'll be right back.